it back to you so you can hear. So that's how I sound when I'm sitting like right here.
Go ahead. I'm going to talk right here. I think this is close enough. Well, you can't keep moving it.
Okay, we'll try that. That sounds pretty good, though.
But then you have to get closer, right?
Well, my voice is much louder than yours,
Jim. Okay. Okay.
The Sound of Hockey episode 260. We're calling this one the Curtis Isaacki episode. Why are we calling it that, Sean?
Well, we fired him. Well, okay, we didn't really fire him, right. So this might sound a little different because Darren and I are actually recording on the same microphone,
mm-hmm.
and we are in Denver.
Yeah,
before the Colorado Kraken game.
Right. So we stupidly didn't. The plan was we were going to record remotely, so each of us brought our own microphones, but not the ones that we usually use in studio, in Bar Down Studios. So the setup is that John and I are sharing a microphone and we're sitting very close to each other, gazing into one another's eyes. It feels like
it's a little creepy.
Yeah, like I feel like they did this in A Star Is Born at some point, like Lady Gaga and Bradley Never Cooper seen it. Were it's pretty good.
It's not a comedy.
That's
either.
Right. Yeah. It's a good movie. I would have recommended seeing it in theaters though. It was a good like
what?
Yeah. You get really? Like the whole rock show experience. Okay. So it was a good movie. But anyway, it is Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown. And Curtis is not actually fired, so that we're clear. We just decided that we should do it in person since we're both here in Denver. It just made a lot more sense. So
it did.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Sound of Hockey. Did I mention that? I'm Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the X.
And we are also followable at sound_hockey on the X, and follow Curtis too at Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
The X as well?
It is on the X, yeah. Okay. Okay, this is going to be a great episode, by the way. I hope that the sound quality comes out okay because I think this is going to be a great episode. And even if not, just bear with us on the sound quality. But the interview on this show Chet Buchanan is fantastic. Chet Buchanan, of course, is the PA announcer at Climate Pledge Arena for the Seattle Kraken. He is a big part of the game day experience within Climate Pledge Arena. And man, the conversation with him is super fun. So I think you all are going to love that. Do not miss it. Stick around for that. We have a couple of 5-star reviews to share. The first one comes from D Stew, or maybe that's D-S-T-U-U-U. It says bad boys, more like good boys. And it's like sort of a poem, sort of. Down on the farm, sound the alarm. Weekly one-timer, what a hockey news primer. Goalie gear corner, it's cold as ice. Parentheses, shout out to Foreigner. Listening in
cold
to...
Cold as ice, the band Foreigner.
The band Foreigner, yeah.
Okay.
You're cold.
Oh, okay.
I know the song.
Okay.
But I don't know what that means, that goalie gear corner is cold as ice, unless he's saying it's cold as in like it's a cold segment. It's not. I'm wondering. I can't tell.
I think he's just trying to make it fun.
Okay. I can't tell if it's pro or anti. Listening in to Darren, John, and Curtis. Major Kraken news. Oh, they'll alert us. No doubt this is the best Kraken pod for all the news on your favorite hockey squad. Loads of hockey knowledge and silliness for a hockey town full of hilliness. If you're not tuning in, what's your deal? This pod is so good, it's honestly unreal. All right, what's there left to say other than that's Kraken hockey, baby? P.S. Stick taps for Andy. I'll always be a fandy.
So, nice. Love it.
That was pretty well done, D-Stew. PN Cam says, sound the alarm, ? Which is interesting because that was one of the references in D-Stew's poem. 5-star review again. It says, fresh off the game with Calgary, I was ruminating on what I saw happening on the ice. I joked with John in the common area that they were struggling, keeping the puck on the sticks because they must have bought the cheap Kmart tape. But really, the past few games, there's been very little continuity in the Kraken play. There doesn't seem to be any line that is truly working well together. Give credit to the guys for playing hard, but individual effort is only providing moderate success. When they're in the right place and there is some fantastic play, but they are mostly looking like they're just trying to keep the puck. The defense has been pretty good, and I think Oleksiak is looking the best since he started with the team. Interesting. So now you have to ask yourself, is it the coaching and the system? Oh, here we go. Yeah. Here we go. Is it the coaching and the system that the players are having a hard time with? Is it time to sound the alarm? While we are only 2 wins and 2 losses differential from last season, it looks a lot like the first year Kraken when they were all new. It will be interesting over the next couple of games to see how they react to yesterday's loss. Keep up the good work. Your podcast is a great companion when I travel. PC. It's from PC. So, good stuff. PN Cam/PC. Yeah, I think you make some good points there. I don't think I'm ready to start blaming the coach just yet, being that he just was a finalist for the Jack Adams Award not that long ago. And he's playing with the same system that worked last year, so why shouldn't it work again? Now, it is a hard system. I think we know that it does make the players skate a lot. And I think, to me, it's, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll figure it out here and start winning. I don't think they've looked bad in too many games, except for that Calgary game. It was kind of an outlier in terms of how bad they looked. Since then, they played Arizona, and I think they looked pretty good in the Arizona game, but they did end up losing.
Same result, so, right? Well, relatively speaking.
So. Yeah, I mean, they got a point out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. We'll get into it.
We'll get into it.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks for the review.
Yes, thank you very much for the 5-star review. I take it you know who that is.
I do.
Okay. Also, quick shout out to Jeff from Oklahoma, who introduced himself to me at my local coffee shop. I don't know if he's the only listener we have in Oklahoma. There aren't many, though. He was visiting. Apparently, he visits Seattle often. He said he's a big just hockey fan in general, and because he has to go back and forth to Seattle for work, he has gravitated towards Sound of Hockey. So we really appreciate the support all the way from Oklahoma, and it's very nice of him to introduce himself, too.
So, I thought that was cool. Quick note on that.
Yeah.
I know it's not our first listener from Oklahoma at all.
Okay.
However, the people that listened to it before have now moved to Denver, Colorado.
Oh.
So we definitely had a listener in Oklahoma, but they have since moved.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure it might now be the only listener.
Okay. In Oklahoma. But not the only listener ever.
Yeah. And Oklahoma. I'm having dinner with them tonight.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Wow. Very cool. Let's talk about these Kraken games that have passed here over the last week. So the Kraken beat Nashville, lost to Calgary in, I think, probably the worst game they played this season. And then they lost in a shootout to Arizona, as we mentioned. That was a little bit better performance. Just thinking about it holistically, in terms of each individual game, I liked the Nashville game quite a bit. They ended up winning 4-2 in that one. It started with a power play goal against, but then they answered with a power play goal of their own. Oliver Bjorkstrand scored from the top of the right circle in a theme that will kind of repeat itself in a moment here. Jared McCann then scored. I really loved that 2-on-1 goal that he scored with Yanni Gourde, because he was on his, his off wing, right? He's on the right side receiving a pass from Yanni Gourde over the stick of famed Kraken defenseman Jeremy Lauzon, former Kraken Jeremy Lauzon. But I loved the way that he turned backwards well in advance of the pass, opened himself up, and was somehow able to still get off a one-timer that beat UC Saros down low. And it was a weird goal because, like, nobody seemed to know that it went in, because it was one of those that went, like, straight to the back of the net and then lodged itself behind the bar, you know? So there's, like, this delayed reaction from the crowd, and it was a beautiful, beautiful goal. And then Yossi had a goal from the right hash, but from there, it was really all cracking. Brian Dumoulin scored with about 24 seconds maybe after the Roman Yossi goal. Great call on that one from John Forslund. I went back and watched some of the highlights on this one. He said, pick up the phone. It's answer time. Dial number 8, Brian Dumoulin, which was awesome. I loved that. Pick up the phone. It's answer time. And then Vince Dunn extended the lead to 4-2 with a big slap shot. So I liked that game. You know, they bent a little bit there to make it 2-2, but then they answer right back. Hackstall talked about it after the game, just how huge that goal was to get that response so quickly after the goal. They follow that one up, and so thinking about it from like a vibe perspective, right? They came off of that 4-game road trip where they went 2-1-1. So you're feeling pretty good about them. Then they win against Nashville in a pretty solid effort, I thought. And so now I'm like, okay, these guys are like...
Turn the corner.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It's run time. We're going on the run.
Yeah.
Right? And then the Calgary game happens, and Calgary's on a 6-game losing streak at the time. It wasn't a bad first period. There was kind of some weird stuff that happened. First off, Andrew Mangiapane slammed Jared McCann's face into the ice, which we're going to talk about more in a certain segment a little bit later, which was dirty. It earned him a match penalty and a 5-minute major penalty. The Kraken score right away, so I told you we had a recurring theme. Oliver Bjorkstrand scored almost the exact same goal that he scored against Nashville. Top of the right circle, just a snipe to the top left corner of the goal. But he did that like right at the beginning of the power play. They needed another goal on that 5-minute power play. I really think they did.
Yeah, and McCann was out. He didn't play in that 5-minute right. at all. I do want to kind of mention that Bjorkstrand, because I felt like they never went back to it, whether it be that power play or later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That I think they could have tried to set that up a little bit better. Because
yeah.
obviously that's a spot that Bjorkstrand's been shooting from that I would have liked to see them go back. And maybe the team countered a bit and made it impossible for that to happen. But I would have liked to see that happen. So
yeah.
carry on.
So, but where it became a big problem is they went through this 5-minute power play. The guy that was serving the power play or the penalty for Calgary was Martin Pospisil, who was playing his first National Hockey League game. He gets out of the box, ends up scoring off a 3-on-2 14 seconds after the penalty ends. It's his first shot in the NHL. So now it's 1-1, right? It felt like it should have been this huge swing because of the 5-minute penalty, and they scored right away. So you're like, all right, we should get this game on the rails here, right? And especially because yeah. they came in with decently high vibes. But that goal, I thought, was really important that Pospisil scored there right after the 5-minute power play had ended. They did retake the lead off a really nice play with Devin Shore, Yanni Gourde, and Ellie Tolvanen. But then it was kind of – the second period was just sloppy. Like, it really turned. I think they only took 3 shots on goal.
Yeah.
And the only goal came in, like, with a minute left, I think. They had 2 power plays in a row with some overlaps. They actually killed off a 5-on-3, and then they got all the way down, and it was like they were so close to killing off the second penalty, and with 1 second left, Noah Hanifin scored, and that was a backbreaker, I think. It didn't lose them the game at that point, but it was a tying goal with 1 minute left in the period. You never want to give up a goal at that point. They come out in the third, immediately give up another goal to Yegor Sharangovich.
It looked really flat the first 10 minutes of the third, too.
Yeah.
They kind of kicked it in later, but it part of that time, it's sometimes too late, right?
Because
they were down by 2 at the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So the final in that one was 6-3. They had 2 empty net goals and
stinker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does align with the sound effect I just made, so that's good. And then the Arizona game, again, I thought they played a little better in this one. You never want to see them. I don't want to take anything away from Arizona because Arizona's had a decent start. Like, they're kind of, I think they actually have a better record than the Kraken at this point.
They definitely do.
And they have improved. Like, they have some better players that they didn't have last year. I thought Arizona looked pretty good in this game, but I also thought, like, the effort from the Kraken was solid, you know, and Hextall said that. He's like, we got a 60-minute effort tonight. I would agree. I thought it was a pretty solid effort. They didn't come away with the win. They ended up losing in the shootout, which they haven't won a shootout in
a long season. Time. Yeah.
I read it was like six games that they've lost. Curtis wrote it in 3 takeaways. Yeah. Anyway, they did score first. They got a 2-on-0 goal like 40 seconds into the game. Matias Michelli got a really cheap goal where he came in 1-on-3 and just took a shot, and it happened to hit Adam Larson's leg and go in. So that made it 1-1. Cheesy goal. But then the Coyotes had 2 identical power play goals in this game. One of them, Barrett Hayton, got a piece of it. But realistically, the play being made was Clayton Keller passing it from the right hash to the slot to Nick Schmaltz, who passed it right back to Clayton Keller, and then Clayton Keller one-timed it. They did the exact same play twice, scored twice on it. And I'm kind of like, man, why don't the Kraken do that? Because that seemed to work really well on the power play. But
I see. My response would be, okay, the first time you get it, the second time, cover those guys.
Right.
Or prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
So
I think fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, you can't get shamed again, I think. It's fooled again.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I think it was a nice play. Got to give him credit for that. You got to respect the guy in the middle, which is Nick Schmaltz. He's a good player. I Would love to have Nick Schmaltz in the Kraken one day. Just fun fact. But yeah, that didn't lose them the game necessarily, but the second power play goal against was the tying goal. We did have two assists in this game from Matty Beniers, who I wrote in three takeaways. I thought it was his best game of the season. Curtis, interestingly, disagreed with me. He didn't think that he didn't write it, but he had said this offline.
We're outing him a bit.
Yeah. I did that in three takeaways anyway, so he's already out there. But yeah, I mean, I thought he just looked really good. Like he was motoring. He made some really smart plays and he was getting good offensive chances. The one thing I didn't like is he had two really good looks from the left hash and shot it right into Connor Ingram's chest both times. I'm like, man, just like a foot.
Like last year, Matty, that's in a corner. It's a goal.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And I, you know, I agree with your assessment. I think it's the best he's looked in a while. I wrote in Monday Musings, I hate the expression, but he's squeezing the stick a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. and what I pick up on is he's somewhat afraid to shoot at times or drive and try to create an opportunity. Where last year, I feel like he would have done it last year. Matty would have done that. Mm-hmm. So I think he's just a little gun shy. He knows he's in a slump, and I think that's weighing on him. There's still a couple of times where I wish he would have shot or taken a shot instead of passing it. I say that, and then he set up Schwartz on the power play goal that they had in the third. That was a beauty.
Yeah.
You know, where he could have shot it, but instead he puts it on the ice right where Schwartz is sitting in front of on the crease.
And around a blocker, right? Like he could have shot and hit the blocker. Instead he passed it around him. Schwartz ends up scoring.
Yeah, so maybe he knows what he's doing out there.
Right.
And
So the thing is, though, we've talked to players that have had slumps before, and consistently what you hear from NHL players is like, well, I don't really worry so much if I'm not scoring, but I do worry if I'm not getting chances, right? The chances keep coming, so I'm not that worried about it. Eventually, the puck will go in the net. I haven't felt like Matty Beniers is getting that much many chances.
Yeah, I agree.
So this game, to see him get a lot of good looks was great. He had a power play also, or a breakaway in the last minute of the game.
Which I was just rooting for, like, wouldn't this that would have been the great one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But, you know, top to bottom, I thought it was a very solid game for him. So a good step in the right direction. You know, the three players that I think have been struggling offensively are Ellie Tolvanen, Matty Beniers, and Jordan Eberle. Ellie Tolvanen has started to get going. He's had a couple goals here recently. Yep. Jordan Eberle still, I don't know what's going on there. He hasn't really found the back of the net. I think he still has just the one goal.
In overtime.
Yeah, the overtime winner against Detroit. So it would be great to see those two guys.
The one thing that we're seeing now is the penalty kill is
stinks.
Struggling.
Stinks, yeah.
It's about 50% over the last couple of weeks, and that's garbage.
Yeah.
Right? That's by far the worst in the league during that span. Yeah.
Which, it's weird, though, because they started off so hot, and I don't feel like they've made any real changes. It's almost like other teams kind of like saw what they were doing and saw an opportunity to kind of expose something. I mean, I find it interesting, like, just watching that game last night between Arizona and Seattle, the styles are very different there. Like, Seattle starts with a very compact sort of box shape around the goal, and then when it looks like a shot is coming, whoever is closest to it kind of springs out and tries to go block it, right?
Yeah,
that's like and then they kind of compact themselves back into that little box. On the other side, Arizona was like spread way out. They're very aggressive up at the blue line. So it's like, you know, I don't know what's right and wrong necessarily. I don't think there's a right and wrong way to do it. I do think last year, you know, we saw them change formation at some point when things weren't working. Right. And that fixed it for them, but they changed into what they're doing now. So I don't know like what's gone wrong necessarily. I'm not that good at dissecting this stuff.
I am the same way, right? I don't want to, but I do. You know, one thing is Tanev hasn't
been
with the team now. Yeah.
He wasn't
first four or five games where they were excellent.
Yeah.
But that said, what I'm noticing is they're just not getting that 50-50 puck and clearing it.
Yeah,
like they're. Teams are keeping it in a lot more than I would expect them to. And Tanev might bring an element with his speed and his wacky craziness. So, and he sounds like he's close, right? Because he's on this road trip and he's practicing taking the morning skates without a red jersey. So
let's head down to the farm. Moo. Niklas Kokko, the goaltender, who is a Kraken prospect, of course. He is currently leading Finnish Liga in save percentage, so he's off to a nice little start.
Yeah.
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 That's good
and
stuff.
And that's a pretty good league
yeah.
to be leading as a rookie. So
pretty good yeah. Liga, yeah. if you will. So that's exciting. Yanni Newman also is the leading U20 goal scorer for Liga. So a couple of good Finns.
So he's wearing a Red Bull
He's got
helmet.
The special helmet. Yeah. yeah. yeah
pretty cool.
Who did we talk to that had the gold helmet at some point?
Derek Ryan. Yeah. But that was Swedish league.
Right. I know, but
okay, yeah.
similar
yeah.
concept. So
couple things. Those two guys are both second round picks from 2022. Mm-hmm. And I think we've alluded to this before, maybe not, but both should be on the world junior team for Finland.
Yes.
So,
yeah, we have talked about that.
And that's coming up in about, 2 months about. Mm-hmm. So,
did we mention at the top of the show when we were trying to figure out how to record here that we again have this microphone propped up in a Kleenex box, as is tradition for any non-studio recording? Did I mention that? I don't know if you mentioned it.
No, you did not.
It feels important to make sure that our listeners know this is a high-tech setup we're working with here. But yeah, back on the rails, those two guys playing in Finland.
That's good stuff. Well. We haven't talked about them a lot. We've talked about more the North American guys.
Mm-hmm.
So
full circle, I do believe Yanni Newman was the return, the ultimate return in the Jeremy Lauzon trade.
Cool.
Am I correct
nice.
On that?
So, sounds about right.
Okay, full circle. Hey, let's get to our interview with Chet Buchanan. We now welcome onto Sound of Hockey another very special guest. You know him as the in-arena voice of the Kraken at Client Pledge Arena, but you may not also know that he is the voice of the Las Vegas Aces of the WNBA. He's the voice of Las Vegas Motor Speedway. He's been on the radio for 24 years. He's the man behind the mic, Chet Buchanan. Thank you so much for joining us. And actually, before I actually was planning to do this a little differently, I was going to say, Chet Buchanan.
Yeah, and thank you for making me younger because I've actually been on the radio. I've been on the radio 24 years in Vegas.
Okay.
And before that, I was on the radio here and in Portland. And a couple of stops, well, one stop in Phoenix and one stop in Salt Lake. And it's a little longer than 24 years.
Okay, so 24 years with your current gig, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
24 years doing mornings in Vegas.
All right, I didn't read your LinkedIn accurately there, so that's my
funny.
Bad. But, you know, my first question, it's a pretty serious one. We are, by the way, you're going to get some background noise in this interview. We're at Client Pledge here
I
before
promise
the...
that's going to be it. They're going to be done checking the ref mic. That'll be it, I swear.
No
then,
problem.
Then the band will do their sound check,
okay.
which I just remembered. So, because they were like, is there someplace quiet we can go? And I went, oh, no, it'll be fine. We're almost done with the whole rehearsal thing. We're not.
All right, so you'll have some ambient noise. I do see band members setting up over there, so that's all right. It's all part of the bit here. First question, though, this one actually came from a listener. They were asking us a question. And,
really?
Yeah, and we thought it would be an appropriate one for you, which is, if Bowie had a voice, what would he sound like?
That's a fantastic question.
There's the band right on cue.
I'm not entirely sure. I've never truly thought of it.
Uh-huh.
And if you gave me, okay, this isn't going to be the only time we're going to do this, right?
Oh, no.
Okay, so next time I'll be ready for you.
All right, that's fair.
I'll have his voice down.
I'm putting you on the spot. See, I said it would be something like almost like a Barney the Dinosaur kind of a voice.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, I'm Bowie, but yeah. It's cooler than that. He's cooler than that.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's almost, I get you. It's because it lends itself to cartoonish.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, hello, Kermit the Frog.
It's not like that or anything. So I don't know. But is he like, hey, Scoob, yo, zoinks. Is he kind of like Shaggy's little brother? I'm trying to think of all the other voices I could do, and I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. we'll keep workshopping it. It's a good question, I think. But, you know, I've spoken to you a number of times, though, Chet. And one thing that I've gathered about you is that you do wear a lot of hats. You juggle a lot of things at once. Can you kind of tell our listeners a little bit about all the different things that you do, not just here within the Kraken, but, you know, your radio stuff, your all that? How do you juggle all that?
Yeah, but you just do. You take it one thing at a time. Whatever's happening at that moment, that's what I'm doing. And I'm serious about that. And it seems simplistic, but it's just you just stay focused. And the cool part about it is that whether it's the radio show, which I'm able to do from anywhere, mm-hmm. you know, technology.
Amazing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then, but I mean, whether it's the radio show or basketball or, you know, or whatever else it is, I only do stuff that I love. And I'm able to make those choices. And I've been able to whittle it down to just stuff that I absolutely love.
Yeah.
So it's easy to focus.
I mean, I think there's probably a lot of people that hold some jealousy for you only doing things that you love. That's pretty incredible. I guess what I like, what I think about is physically, you know, you do the Las Vegas Aces, you do Motor Speedway. Like, do the seasons not overlap at all, or do you find yourself flying back and forth a lot at some parts of the year? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm on a plane. I'm on a plane every couple of weeks,
right.
Back and forth. But again, I'm the luckiest guy you know.
Yeah.
I grew up here in Seattle. I grew up on a farm in Duval. We've got 80 acres out in Duval. I'm third generation on that. And so really, is there any place that we'd rather be than on the farm? Well, sure, Vegas. So there's the band right on cue.
Yeah.
But
it's nice.
But it's really awesome. I've got two different lives that I'm able to live, but I love them both. And you know, and again, to be able to come home and be in this building that I practically grew up in.
Yeah.
Being the PA announcer for the Seattle Kraken, are you nuts? You know, here's the only other gig I want after this is the Sonics when they come back. Love it, because you know what? Grubauer is a lot like Super Sonics without the voice cracks. So.
That's very true.
So I know you started on the radio at a very young age. How did that all come about?
Yeah, 15 years old at KRKO in Everett. I was working at Evergreen Speedway. We had a concessions truck, you know, like those trucks that go out to construction sites and whatnot. We had one of those that went around in the pits, and they were doing a live broadcast, and literally I just told my partner, I said, hey, hold it down for a second here, and went over to the guys from KRKO and said, I will come in and do anything if you just let me hang out. So can you put me to work? And they were like, yeah, sure, kid. They're like, great, you start Monday. I was like, oh, well, I can't Monday because I have baseball. And they were like, and then you could tell they're rolling their eyes, yeah. Like, oh, God. So I gave them a bunch of free food. And then I said, I'll be there right after baseball's over. And they were like, when's that? I was like, because it's high school baseball. So it was Memorial Day because we weren't going to the playoffs. And I showed up the day after Memorial Day, and they were like, oh, my God, he's here. So I washed the van. I washed the van and swept the parking lot and took out the garbage and filed whatever they needed filing. I mean, it was just, I was a grunt. And loved every second of it. Literally worked there for a year before my mom goes, hey, you know, you got to put gas in this car. And before I was riding my bike.
Right.
I was riding my bike. Yeah. I lived over off of Echo Lake Road.
Okay.
Kind of between like Woodinville and Monroe.
Yeah.
And would ride my bike down the farm roads to KRKO, jeez, which I don't know if you know, it's down in the valley in Everett. And I would ride every day after school. And then my mom might come and pick me up, or somebody would give me a ride or whatever. And then finally, when I turned 16, she was like, yeah, you need them to pay you. And I was like, all right. So that was really how it started.
That's like a farmhand, right? Kind of the labor.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, again, I was, again, doing something that I loved. Yeah, so it didn't matter.
Hey, I know that. So is PA announcing like a natural progression from being on the radio, or you probably have speaking engagements or emceeing engagements, and then that kind of parlays a bit? Like, how'd that all come together?
Well, back to Darren's question, too, was, I do. I do a lot of corporate gigs. I used to do about 50 events a year auctioneering. I'll still do a handful of those here and there. So there's a lot of that stuff that goes on. So I caught the PA bug early. Like, I just loved... I wanted to know who the guy was that was talking. I wanted to know when we would come to Totems games. That's how old I am. That we would come to Totems games. And I was like, it's one of my earliest memories is coming to Totems games and asking my dad, who's that talking? And we thought there, I don't know if you remember the old Coliseum, but there was a gondola way up pretty
I've
close to where we are right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I imagine he was in the box that, you know, the PA guy was in the box like they used to be. But I was enamored with it. And then we would go to Sonics games, and I freaking loved George Tolles.
Uh-huh.
And one time, George Tolles, instead of calling traveling, said steps. And I was hooked. And I'm not kidding you. And I was watching him. I could see him, you know, sitting at center court. And I'm like, I got to do that. And George and I are friends.
Oh, right.
Now, George and I are friends. In fact, I'll probably go call him right after this because it's just, yeah. He was the beginning of it. And then Tom Hutler with the Mariners. Before that, Gary Spinell was before Hutler. You know, and I always wanted to do play-by-play. We've been so blessed in this city with some of the greatest play-by-play guys that have ever lived. You know, and it carries on with the Kraken.
I know.
With Everett Fitzhugh and John Forslund.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Dynamic.
I mean, and John and Edzo together, there's nobody better.
Yeah.
There's nobody better than that.
So I was going to – you mentioned the – seeing a Totems game, like where was hockey in your life, like as you grew up? You played a little, or you didn't play, but you watched the Totems a bit. But was there much beyond that?
No, it was weird. I never actually like played. But yeah, my dad would bring me. I loved hockey. It was probably the first thing I loved, honestly. I mean, and I loved the Sonics, and then the Seahawks came on. Came a little bit later. That's how old I am. you know, the Seahawks and the Mariners. Yeah. But I mean, what was I? 10, you know, maybe something like that. But the Totems, man, did I love the Totems. And the whole idea of some of our guys then got to go play for the Canucks in the National Hockey League. And, you know, when Vancouver was a faraway land of Canada and the NHL was, you know, because we didn't have it. So when I was a kid, like, I liked the Bruins because they had Bobby Orr, and I read a book about Bobby Orr. And I just thought it was so freaking amazing that Harold Sneps got to go play for the Canucks. And that Orland Kurtenbach, you know, was our coach and then went right. there. And, yeah, no, I was hooked.
It's funny because I always think about, like, the connections that the WHL teams have to, like, NHL, right? Once
yeah,
you
man.
See, like, I remember Patrick Marleau, and it was actually worked in reverse for me, where I'm like, wait, Patrick Marleau played in Seattle Thunderbirds? I'm like, are you kidding me? But I can imagine it has the opposite effect where you're like, oh, that's my team now because I remember seeing him play or that coach come through here.
Our radio color guy, Al Kaniski, was playing on when I got into hockey formally.
Yeah.
I was doing on-ice promotions. You know, I was like a precursor to the in-arena host.
Yeah.
And I would go out. But Al played on those Thunderbird teams.
He was dirty, wasn't he?
Late 80s, early 90s.
He's a dirty player.
Only if you pissed him off.
I've played against – so for years I played against him in beer league.
Oh, I'm sure he's dirty in beer league.
And I saw him the other day and gave him a joke because, like, my early memory about playing against a former WHL player was him baiting me into a penalty pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. No, Al's a really smart guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Al's
he's
a
great.
Super smart guy, so I'm sure he knew how to push your buttons.
Oh, yeah, and I told him. He had a good chuckle about it. So one thing I always think about is how you prep for opposing teams, like, as the rosters come through, because – especially preseason might be a little like I've never seen this name or heard this name pronounced. Like, do you have to do a lot of prep before these guys come through? Because sometimes they're not maybe household last names.
I mean, I guess it would depend on your definition of a lot of prep, but I make sure. Because I got caught a couple of times that first season, and I thought I knew. Oh, I'm a big hockey fan.
Yeah.
Oh, I got this. No, and then I was like, oh, wait. I'm not sure that's right.
Mika Zibanejad.
Oh, no, the Zibanejads and guys like that's easy.
That's easy because they're pretty well known,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. No, but I double source. I double source everything. I try to watch, you know, videos and get, you know, if you can get the home team play-by-play guy, he's not going to screw that up.
Yeah. I always thought that was kind of interesting because I still have a hard time with Anaheim. Right? So
you mean saying Anaheim?
Right. To be clear, that's not the players on Anaheim.
Just can't say Anaheim?
He says an N at the end. Did you notice that? It was Anaheim. It's always bothered me.
And now I just lean into it, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean.
You just do it. If you do it quick enough, they don't notice.
I think it's part of it. I grew up in Northern California, so it's like an anti-Southern California thing. So I don't know. Maybe that's what
I understand
it is.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Rivalries run deep. So one thing I definitely want to know is, who's your favorite Kraken player to announce currently? Like the goal scoring or... I mean, Grubauer gets a lot of pop from the crowd.
Yeah, you love...
Tommy Burton gets a lot of
Tommy
pop,
Burton
right?
gets a good... Tommy Burton does get a good pop.
Yeah.
I'd like to think, in wrestling parlance, I'd like to think that I put him over a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, but Tommy's great. Tommy's great, and they love him. Because Seattle fans are passionate, and Seattle fans love your passion. You know what I mean? And Tommy Burton is passionate.
Yeah.
And he's exciting. To answer your question, it's probably as much as they love Maddie you know, so Maddie Beniers, Yanni Gord, the guys that they really love, you know, and but Gru. And when you come to a game, take a look at the, you know, now and starting in goal tonight for the Kraken, number 31, Phillip, and then look at the clock. Because I'm going to take whatever's left on that clock, and that's how long the Gru is.
I have noticed there's times where it's like, wow, that was a long one tonight.
You doggone right, because if I got the time, I'm doing it.
That's
and
great.
Some nights it just feels like it needs it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like some nights, it's like, let's go.
My favorite is Ellie Tolvanen because of the way that you, and I've actually seen you do Ellie Tolvanen live, and the facial expression that you make with it. And when you do it, it goes up. It goes, Ellie Tolvanen.
Yeah.
And you do this thing. Right. Up. Exactly. And I witnessed you do that once. And now every time I hear that announced, I imagine your face getting really bright and your eyebrows getting really, really high up on your forehead as you say Tolvanen, which I think is great. There is actually a question in this, which is, how do you come up with that? Like, do you do a lot of workshopping to be like, you know what, that sounds good, that doesn't sound so good, I like how I did that one. Like, do you get feedback? How does that all work out? Or do you just run with it? You just do it once and then run with it that way?
Just try it on for size and then just keep playing with it. And then I go back and forth on stuff too, because A, you've got people who are here, you know, how many out of the 40 nights, you know, how many times are they here, and how many times do you want to hear Maddie Beniers the same way? But by the same token, you know, we all know this, you know, now batting the center fielder, number 24, Ken Griffey Jr. and that's Tommy Hutler. Did it every time, and if he did it different, I would be so hurt. I would have been so hurt, and not for nothing. As an homage, I started doing NASCAR at Las Vegas Motor Speedway and some other tracks, right towards the, well, not towards the end of Dale Earnhardt Jr., but, you know, I got five or six times. He was so popular, and they loved him so much that, you know, you've got somebody who's telling you, okay, go, next one, next one, next one. And I would wait until his face popped up on the screen, because then literally watching 100,000 people rise out of their seat because they know it's Dale Earnhardt Jr. next is such a rush. And then to be able to, so as an homage to Tommy and to Ken, I did Dale driving the number 88 nationwide Chevrolet, Dale Earnhardt Jr. And it just makes me smile to think about it.
That's awesome. I love that so much. You know, I have a similar thing that comes to mind, which is, and I do actually have a question on this one. I grew up a Twins fan, and Kirby Puckett was, so he had a classic call. The announcer, his name was Bob Casey, was the PA announcer, and he'd go, Kirby Puckett, the center fielder, Kirby, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And Torrey Hunter rose to stardom, also as a center fielder, and he always had his own thing for Torrey Hunter, and then one day, all of a sudden, he went, it's the center fielder, Torrey Hunter! And the whole crowd was like, oh, that was the Kirby Puckett intro.
That was the Kirby Puckett call, yeah.
And he never did it again. And I wondered if, like, maybe Torrey was like, I'd rather not have the Kirby Puckett intro. You know, like, I wondered if it was just a one-time thing. He just felt like it one day. I always wanted to ask Bob Casey.
Is he still alive?
No, he passed. Bob Casey passed. But I always wondered.
I'm like, we got to ask him. I know. We got to get him on and ask him.
Yeah.
Like, I just made myself part of your show. We have to get him on. No, because that would be, or who knows, one day he might have just gone into autopilot and, you know, put the two
conflated
together.
Conflated them.
Or he tried it on and didn't like it.
Or maybe, I always wondered if maybe Torrey Hunter was like, don't do that again.
Yeah.
You think?
You never know. Yeah. Maybe.
You ever had a player tell you he didn't like his intro, or she didn't like their, they didn't like their intro?
I can't think of it.
Okay.
I can't think of one. I'm also one of those people too that when you get that kind of feedback, it's always funny to me, because it's like, dude, you got bigger things to worry about than this. You know, you're worried about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why?
This is a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here, but I did have the pleasure of kind of shadowing game ops last year. One thing I noticed is that you stand when you make your announcements. Where did that come from? That's not a standard, is it?
Amongst no, I don't
PA
think so.
Community.
A lot of people are really, I think a lot of people are surprised by that. I'm kind of a high energy guy, so okay. I prefer it.
Do you project a little better when you stand up?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And the opportunity was there when I came here. When I first started, I was sitting between two people at a table, and I couldn't really see as well as I would have liked. And I was kind of like, well, can I just go over there and stand up? And they looked at me like, what? And I'm like, yeah, can I just, you know, then that way you guys don't have to talk over me and I can be over here and do my thing. And so now that's just what I do. But like for basketball and stuff, you don't get to do that. And I still do. In fact, I probably do even more vocal gymnastics than I do for hockey.
Right.
But.
Well, and it is interesting. You mentioned the thing about the announcer was probably in the penalty box back in the day, right?
No doubt.
With how things have kind of changed, and now you're not there anymore. You're up above, and there's a lot more information being relayed and all that. Have you been through it long enough now that you've experienced some of those things changing a little bit? That like you knew kind of the differences between being right down there on the ice or being courtside or whatever, and now being off somewhere else. Like,
well, there's no better place to watch a National Hockey League game than from the box.
Sure,
yeah. You know, I mean, and you just, boy, you get such a sense of how big and fast and amazingly skilled these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, and it's an incredible game. But I like, we were kind of down in section 117, which is in the corner on the main, on the street level of Climate Pledge Arena. We were there for the first two seasons and that was okay. And I liked being around the fans. It was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool having the fans around you and stuff like that. They moved us up to the press bridge this year. You see the game a lot better from a technical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You see the game really well up here, and it's kind of swanky up here. You know, it's not
some,
bad.
There's some free food.
We got a nice space. Yeah, I don't have to go up. I don't have to take an elevator mm-hmm. to get food, and there's private bathrooms, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
but no, it's different. Here's the thing, man. I love this so much. I don't care where I've got to be.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It yeah. just doesn't matter. You know, they like NFL guys, they stick them like practically in the end zone and everything. That's a hard place to do a game from.
Yeah, yeah.
So much love to everybody who does football sitting down in the corner.
This is probably going to be a hard one for you to answer, but I'm curious. Of all these moments that you've been involved in across different sports, across different events, do you have one that's like a favorite that you think about it kind of gives you goosebumps?
Yeah, first time cracking the mic in this building.
Yeah.
With the Kraken.
Yeah. Was that an intentional Kraken pun there,
no.
cracking the mic?
No, actually, that's why I went back and tried to cover it. It was, but the first, you know, it's time to release the Kraken.
Yeah.
And there's so much emotion, you know, go along with that. A funny story, not funny. But when I met with Todd Lewicki
mm-hmm.
and we were in his, we were down at the other end of the press bridge, and he was standing to my right, and he came in and he was focused on that, what was going on at that particular time. And then he turned and we started talking, and he goes, tell me about your first hockey game. And I was standing in here, and I hadn't been in Climate Pledge since they did everything. And I'm noticing, you know, the one cool thing about this place is the bones are still here. You know, the original bones and the windows and all that kind of stuff. And it is the Coliseum and it is the key, but oh my goodness, is it so much better. You know what I mean? And is it so amazing and so new, but for a kid who grew up, I always tell everybody I grew up in this building, and my great uncle worked here as an usher. And another guy that was like, that I consider an uncle was the head usher here. And, you know, and my dad brought me to games when I was a kid and stuff like that. So Todd turns around and he goes, tell me about your first hockey game. And I go, it's really funny. I said, yeah, I want to say I was 6 years old, and it was right down there. And we had seats right by the penalty box.
And you remember where you're sitting and everything,
and I said,
right?
You see right down there.
Yeah.
And I said, it was Seattle Totems, Salt Lake City Golden Eagles, and I still have the program.
Oh, my God.
And he looked at me like I had, you know, like I had two heads. But it was awesome. And you know, we talked a little bit more, and then he was like, you know, you want to be the public address announcer for the Seattle Kraken. And he asked me, can you make us better? Because that's his thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you make us better? And I said, well, with all due respect, I hope so. I'd like to think so. And he was like, all right, we're in. You know, and that was it. And he gave me a hug. And he hugged me. That was the other cool thing. I was like, well, and that's 1,000% me. I'm trying to find the picture, and I know nobody can see what I'm trying to show these guys. But so then they were like, hey, are you telling the truth about that program? And I went, yeah, I'll send you a picture to right when I get back to Vegas, because I knew right where it was. It's in a bin in the closet in the bedroom.
That's very cool.
So
that's
very awesome.
Cool. All right, last one for you, Chet, and thank you for making a little time for us.
Dude, already?
Here. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we could do have go a forever. We do we have really a game could, to do. But there's, everybody has some responsibilities here. Yeah, John's got to go get a beer. So, all right, here it is. You ready for it?
Yes.
All right, how would you introduce John Barr and Darren Brown if they were playing for the Kraken? John, what position would you be playing, John?
Forward. Right wing.
Oh, you guys are gonna. So I'm doing. Yeah. It's the Kraken. Here's tonight's Kraken starting lineup. Presented by Smartsheet.
I trust your artistic piece on this. Like, do
is that what that
do.
Is?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's very kind. I mean, we want to see the master at work here. So. So he's the right wing. I would probably be playing goalie. That's my
goalie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So. Are we doing nicknames as well?
That's up to you. I think I'd allow it.
See, and here's the funny thing that there's easy ways, and then there's different. Like, I switched up Jordan Eberle, and I go back and forth on Jordan Eberle because sometimes I like to do it with a little bit of a sneer, and Adam Larson the same way. But I mean, I think it started out like Adam Larson,
right? Like, is that what you mean by that, with sneer? Like,
mine
like a
was Adam Larson.
Right.
So I go that way, and then some days it's Adam Larson.
Okay. I see the difference.
And honestly, we're in season three, and I'm still kind of working it out sometimes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think it's too. It's too basic. Mm-hmm. And so I want to play with it a little bit.
Is John's name, would that be a tough one because it's only two syllables?
No.
Okay.
No, because you could take that all over the place.
Yeah.
It's kind of like sing it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, so if you want to go on a run, you know, if you want to go like on an R&B run, you could do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, so if I wanted to do, you know, like the cascading, you know, starting at right wing, what's your number?
12.
12's your number? Yeah? Doesn't Stan matter. Smeal? Wasn't Smeal 12?
It varies.
Smeal was a 12?
I'm 6 this year, but yeah, I vary.
6?
Yeah.
Like Adam.
Yeah, that's why I changed it. Yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know, starting at forward, number 12, John Barr. I'd start there. I'd
that's
start
pretty
there.
Good. It's a good starting spot.
Go. I'd start there. You know,
John's jumping.
Seriously, and some people sing in the car. I do this. Yeah. I'm the crazy person. I think about it a lot more than you might imagine. I know sometimes it doesn't seem like it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and so it'd be really easy. And I think so. It's really easy to go, Darren Brown. You know, that's easy.
Yep.
But man, see, because it's two syllables, one, and so. Like, I would maybe go, like, Darren. You see, I don't like it. I'd have to work on it, though.
Yeah.
But so it would be, or even a, you'd start it the same way. Would Darren you? Brown, or
ooh,
Darren
I like
Brown.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
That was
put a little
it.
Growl on it. Yeah, put a little growl at the end.
That was it. Yeah. That was it. I do have the same cadence as Yanni Gord, right? But his is more.
Oh no!
But his is unique. His Yanni Gord.
Right, and that's where you got to hold the note.
Yeah,
yeah, and you got to hold the note.
Yes,
and it's almost kind of like it's all one syllable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost all one note. You know.
Yep.
Yanni Gord. It's all one breath.
It's so crazy to see you, like, because I've heard it so many times. I'm like, holy crap! I'm seeing it happen. This is how the magic is done.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not the only nerd.
Because oh, no,
I love that
it,
stuff, too. I love,
love it.
Well, and again, I was that kid. I was like, where are they? Because I wanted to see them.
Yeah.
It was the greatest. Yeah. It was awesome. My dream sequence would love for and it, hockey would doesn't really lend itself to it, but the Suns back in the day had Cedric Ceballos go out when he was doing their in arena hose. Said Ceballos, who they love in Phoenix so much, even to this day. But Ced would go out to center court and do starting lineups, spot lit.
Oh,
and it was like a boxing. Wow. You know, it was like a boxing announcer.
A little tough in hockey.
It was like Bruce Buffer. Yeah. So we can't do that. And I don't know that I'd be. I think it's cool that they let me say my name.
Stanley Cup final. That you said Michael Buffer, right? Because didn't he do the Stanley Cup final for.
No, stay out of my rink, Buffer. No, don't take my listen.
He did it though.
I know, but I don't want to. If we're in a Stanley Cup final, I want to announce our team. I don't.
Maybe from the deck.
No,
no,
no. They can do that for somebody else. Okay. Let him do that for Vegas.
All right.
No, I want to do that.
I love it.
I'll get territorial.
No,
with this.
I want you to do it. I want.
Oh,
you to
from
do
the
it.
Deck.
Yeah, or center weird. Ice. But you could. I'm saying.
It'd be weird
ice.
Though. Don't you think it'd be weird?
No.
I think it's cool that they let
me say normalize this. Let's seed it now, and we'll get it going. We'll start a grassroots campaign. I know a guy.
It'd be crazy. I'll tux
John's
up.
Great at grassroots campaigns.
I got tuxes.
So
I got tuxes. I can make it happen.
Yeah.
No, that'd be fun. But I would love to. I would love that'd be a cool. That'd be a cool touch. Yeah. But again, just honestly, Seattle sports fans are the greatest sports fans on the planet, and I know that because I am one. And we know how to get loud, and we know what to do. And they're learning here. You know, my one day, I want to hear a solid 2 minutes of noise for a penalty kill, and I want to hear it be even louder on a power play. You know what I mean? I want to see that kind of passion one day, and we'll get there.
Well, in like the playoffs, we're getting there, right?
Yeah,
like,
dude.
It was. Incredible.
They know when to crank it up. You know, Seattle sports fans.
Game 4 against Colorado, the overtime winner. I dreamed about that for 10 years, right? Something like that. And it was, and I had to decompress after. I was so like emotionally spent. Like I get emotional about all the games, even preseason games. I'm bouncy on my seat.
Oh,
a little
same.
Bit, you know? And
same.
Anyway, but that, I can't wait. You know, it's, we still got some runway to bring it up. A couple mm-hmm. notches, but I think it's been great, and that the playoff got us a little taster of
no
what
doubt.
It could be. So it was awesome.
Well, it's like Mariner fans too. They crank it up but what I love is how it's ingrained in our soul as a Seattle sports fan for Husky football and Kooks too. But you know, here in Seattle, Husky football and Seahawk football, and you know, when your team is on defense, you have a job. You have a job, and that is to disrupt the other team's mojo and whatever they got going. And, you know, and we do that better than anybody. Sorry, Kansas City. Sorry, Denver. We do that better than anybody else. We do.
Yeah. Well, Chet, this has been fun. I think we could probably talk for, you know, you just want to be a podcast host with us now? You know, consider it.
I should probably stay. I should probably stay a free agent. I should probably just stay in the guest role. Probably should, but we can do this anytime you want.
Have you loved it though? Because you said you do things you love. God. So,
oh, this?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, always.
Okay,
good. I'll sit here and chop it up with you guys all day long.
All right, good. I'm happy to hear that.
Seriously, and we could talk about it.
We didn't burn the bridge. That's good.
Yeah, never. Yeah. Never ever.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh wait, you know what I was going to ask you?
Yeah.
How much does it suck when you're in the middle of an announcement and somebody scores a goal?
It's just funny. It's just, you know. Oh, honestly. Did you see the tweet last game? Was it last game or the game before? Who was it that – it was Carolina. That I was literally in the middle of the goal call, and they scored.
Uh-huh.
And I heard it. I could hear it in the background. And it was like – because I'm not really – I'm kind of in my own zone while that's happening. And I was like, what do you do? Well, just power through. Finish this. And so I tweeted at him. I'm like, hey – do you mind letting me finish the announcement before you score yours? Kind of rude, honestly. You're a guest here, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we need all teams to take that into account. Now, I hope they all listen and keep that just in mind when they go out and consider scoring goals. If you're talking, save it.
Or maybe they just don't score at all in this building.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't mind
a double cracking goal, right? Because didn't we already have one in this year?
Oh, yeah, that's fun, right? Too. No, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's, and you know what? Yes, I stopped for lithium We'll stop. I should have a sign. We'll stop for lithium, which other. I hope everybody understands that.
Yeah, I think they will. Yeah, very much. Chet Buchanan, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work. We sure enjoy hearing you here.
Let's go cracking.
Exactly.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Okay, so awesome interview. We had a great time there. Sorry for it's not the best sound quality that we've had, I think, on
I think lore, right?
Top to bottom with this episode is probably a little bit off. That's okay. It was pretty funny though, and Chet even alluded to it in that conversation that when we got there, I was like, "Hey, do you know any good like quiet place to do this?" He's like, "Oh, it's going to be
Done. They're going to be done in a second." Yeah.
And then as soon as we start, it's like, "All right, strike up the band."
He's like, "Oh yeah, the band needs."
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about the band. So that was really funny. But yeah, hopefully it added to the experience. But I did want to call out that we talked about when they score back to back, and he said, "You know, I'll stop for lithium." That happened in that game.
Yes, I remember that. That was awesome.
Yeah, we recorded that interview prior to the Nashville game, and that was the night that Dumoulin scored again under 30 seconds after whoever scored for Nashville. We just talked about it a few minutes ago, but I don't remember. So,
thanks, Chet.
Thank you, Chet. Awesome. Yeah. That was really fun, and I hope that we can have him on again. It sounded like he was very interested in doing it again. So, we now move on to our segments, and our first segment is John's favorite segment, Bad Boys. All right, so we alluded to the Mangiapane situation earlier. The one thing I want to say about this, because as soon as they put out the announcement that he was getting suspended for one game for jamming Jared McCann's face into the ice, which was totally dirty, they said in their thing that they had accepted his reasoning that he didn't mean to slam his head into the ice, right? Which is like, well, I didn't mean to commit that murder, sir, you know, like, but different degree of murder, I guess, in that scenario. But yeah, I think it was a very dirty play, was my take on it. I think people get so bent out of shape when they see, you know, he should have gotten more. And I just don't care. I know we've talked about that before. I just don't really care how much of a suspension, because it doesn't do anything for the Kraken.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought, honestly, when they were reviewing it, I was worried they were just going to call a 2-minute and not a 5-minute. Because I don't really know the kind of methodology in how they assess that. Because I've seen
there's some
worse.
Subjectivity there.
Remember? Do you remember Schultz got hit from behind in Florida last season?
Against Lomberg, yeah.
Yeah, and they, no disciplinary action. And
that was right around the time when Oleksiak got suspended for something that was, I thought, much less.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have the take that, oh, player safety is a joke. I don't.
I agree.
I just don't think they're very transparent about the difference between the two. Because the only time they're commenting on things is when people are suspended.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know why
somebody doesn't get suspended.
That's right. And so, and Ross Colton, by the way, just vicious on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I saw that.
Pretty brutal, but just fined, right? And I'm like, geez, it was two blatant attacks on team. And Luke Hughes is now injured because of it. And I would have been like, well, I mean, that's the stuff you want to avoid. And so he should be suspended. But no, that's, and again, I think they're actually fairly consistent, but sometimes I just don't know what is enough to justify the suspension.
So my point though, like if we're talking about what's the absolute maximum, right? If they looked at this and said, yeah, it's absolutely intent to injure, right? How many games could you have ever seen them giving him based on past precedent, right? Like what's the absolute maximum you would have seen them give Andrew Mangiapane for that?
4, okay. Maybe.
Yeah. And so that's where I'm like, all right.
That's,
so
and
it's
that's a
be,
stretch. Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And that felt like a stretch. To me, I was like, they might give him 2. There's a chance they'll give him 2. They come out and say it's 1. And I'm like, all right, well, he already pretty much missed that whole game by getting kicked out for the match penalty. So I'm like, 2. I kind of get it. You know, I'm like, all right, 1 game is not like that far off from what I would have predicted them to give. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it tells me that it's like semi consistent that, like, all right, he has a hearing, he's going to get suspended. Is it going to be 1 game or 2? That was really my question. Now, the thing that bothers me about it, though, is, again, this doesn't help the Kraken in any way other than, I guess, they lose a player for a game that's, you know, in their division, right? So, like, them theoretically having a harder time winning, I guess, in a way, helps the Kraken. So here's my take on it, John, and I thought about this again, and I know we've talked about this, and I've probably given a similar pitch before, but maybe this is a little bit better than last time. The Kraken, as the team that had the player have the hit against them should get to have the choice. All right, we're suspending him for one game. Should he serve that in the next game that they play, or should he serve that the next time that they play the Kraken?
So I know we've talked about this.
Have I had that exact take before? I think it was a little different.
I think we've talked about it. I just don't, I don't see how you could administer if it happens and they don't play each other the rest of the season.
Doesn't matter in my, so that's why they, so,
yeah, okay. But what if he changes teams and
he's still suspended for the next time that he plays against
just
the
Kraken? Period.
They shouldn't have to face him no matter what team he's on for the next. And if it's a 8-game suspension, they don't have to face him for like 3-4 years.
Okay. That I've never heard quite that extent. I don't think we've talked to that detail, but I think it's, I just don't like the administration of it. Right. And like, carrying over 4 years that we got to remember that,
hey, you know, we had to remember about Melanson's preseason suspension over a year, right?
Which was still funny because
it was pretty funny. And then I was like, well, he's not in the lineup tonight. He's serving his suspension, right? It's like,
right. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I just, there, so there's precedent for it there in a way, but I think there should be something where like the Kraken should have a little bit of a say in what the punishment is, or whoever, you know, not necessarily just the Kraken, but like, it doesn't help them to have him. And fans get so bent out of shape, like, oh, it should have been more. It's like, why do you care? You know, what difference does it make to you?
I agree there.
Anyway, that's my take on that. The other bad boys we have is the entire Ottawa Senators organization, who, remember they had the whole, well, I guess it was last season, there was a snafu where the Golden Knights tried to trade Evgeny Dodonov to Anaheim. The previous season? It was 2 seasons ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
March of 2022.
Okay. Really? That was 2 seasons ago? Are you sure?
Season and a half ago, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Time is going. It's a flat circle. Time is a flat circle.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he ended up back with Vegas at that point. Am I remember that correctly?
So they tried to trade him.
He had a no trade clause.
And they announced it and everything.
Yeah.
And then it was like, whoa, 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 whoa. We have Anaheim is on my no trade list.
Yeah. With an N. Anaheim with an N.
Yes. And which came up in this podcast.
It did. Yep.
So then the trade got reversed or whatever and said, you can't do that because he's got a no trade clause. And so it turns out Ottawa did not pass on the paperwork, if you will, to Vegas when he was traded a season prior from Ottawa to Vegas. So are we thoroughly confused now?
Pretty much, which is fine. I think
you get if it.
You can go read about
plenty
it.
Plenty of people have been talking about it.
It was a clerical error made several years ago that now has cost them their first round draft pick in one of the next 3 seasons, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very strange thing. It is all a very strange thing, because they also have had a transfer of ownership in the last year. And so this new owner, Andlauer, came out and he was like, I don't understand how this could have taken so long, right? And I think he's right. I think he's got a point. Like, he comes in and now all of a sudden, I don't know. It's just, it's a weird situation.
I know people are like, oh, why should he have to forfeit? He just bought... cost $1 billion, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I don't care. You inherit people's debt.
That's true.
When you buy companies. And I'm not going to feel sorry for $1 billion.
No, I don't feel bad for him at all. I mean, I kind of agree with his sentiment that it shouldn't have taken that long to make that decision.
He knew about it when he bought the team. I think it was underrepresented, or at least to him. He felt like the league says it wasn't going to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he views it. A first round pick is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of sympathy there but I think people are like, oh, he shouldn't have to. He just bought the team, but too bad. You inherit the debt and any issues that come with it. So
what about the take that I saw a few times that Connor Bedard ended up on the Blackhawks, who don't exactly
that
have
stinks.
A sparkling past?
That stinks. Mm-hmm. I would have, comparing the two, yes, that's BS, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Chicago should have been penalized a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, I agree.
There's no doubt in my mind. And it's crappy when you compare the two. But, like, separate the two because they're separate incidents. Let's address the Chicago thing stinks, period. But yes. I think the Ottawa one's fair.
And there's been another lawsuit against Chicago for a similar situation. So that conversation continues on. The conversation continues on.
Yeah, and I'm like, I wonder if the league knew about this other incident, which would be really crappy if they didn't. And there's not much on it just yet. And it's somebody staying anonymous about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. conversation for another day that I'm sure we will have again.
Yeah.
We now move on from our bad boys
Speaking of Ottawa, should we talk about the changes that they've made?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They also fired their GM. But, you know, that's whatever.
Pierre Dorion.
Right.
See, and I think that is a good action by the owner because the GM was in charge during the Dadonov trade.
Clerical error. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And if you don't have good controls or good processes, somebody should pay for it. Mm-hmm. And he did. So.
We now move on to our weekly one-timers, which I started to do. Ooh, it's weird to have you looking right in my face as you do that. Jack Campbell, our first weekly one-timer. I moved back while he did it that time. Jack Campbell has been sent to the minors, which is, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's an
$5 million
move.
Goalie in the minors?
Yeah.
He's no Cal Peterson either, so right. Something to keep an eye on now. They did call up Calvin Pickard, former Seattle Thunderbird, who's been bouncing around the league for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's cool to see for Thunderbirds fans. But yeah, their goaltenders kind of stinks. And somehow Campbell's numbers are better than Skinner's, but they chose to send him down, send a message, I don't know, $5 million a year for... three more seasons after this season, by the way.
I feel like...
You always hate to see that in a division rival.
Oh, yeah. Jack Campbell, the thing that stinks there is, like, I really like Jack Campbell. He seems like a great dude. And they keep having him sign, or he keeps signing in these places. Well, I guess, did he sign with... No, he didn't sign with Toronto, did he? Was he a trade? He definitely signed with Edmonton as a free agent. Anyway, he went from one, like, terrible place to play if media impacts you... to another place to play that's terrible if media impacts you, right? And he started to play bad at the beginning of the season and went right back under the microscope and people blaming him. And I have to think that has an impact. So that's it. Our next weekly one-timer. The Minnesota Wild have made a couple of trades as their season has kind of gone sideways here early on. Kalen Addison was traded to the Sharks. I think this one's interesting because he's a young player with upside still. He was acquired in the 2020 trade that brought Jason Zucker to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Kalen Addison was, I think, part of the return in that one. And then the Wild also traded for Zach Bogosian, so... Getting
how fired up are you about that?
Yeah, younger and faster, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. I think the only reasoning I can come up with for moving on from Addison is obviously they didn't like what they were getting out of him. They didn't get much of a return. It's like a late round pick and I don't know. But they do have Brock Faber now. So like if they wanted a good young defenseman, they already have Brock Faber. So
I would have expected Addison to be a little bit more relevant now. He's 23, second round pick. Hasn't done a whole lot, right?
Yeah.
So I think the just hasn't panned out for him. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how he does in San Jose. Can't imagine that's a good spot, but we'll see.
Why, things are going great there. Dude, they gave up 20 goals in two games. That's insane. 20 goals in two games. You're right. They did win since then. That's what they needed to do. They needed to bottom out, apparently. Our next weekly one-timer, Yaroslav Halak. Oh, wait a minute. Do we have breaking news, Shane Wright and Ryan Winterton have been recalled by the Seattle Kraken. Wow. Ryan Winterton and Shane Wright. Very interesting. What do you think about that?
Felt like Winterton was going to get a call up at some time this year. It seems a little early, but might not draw into games, but might be a contingency. The interesting thing is how does that, and we'll probably know by the time you listen to this or by the time it's posted, is... They've got two open roster spots right now. Burakovsky and Tanev is currently on IR, and we thought Tanev was coming back sooner. So now how does that change things? We'll see. I'd like to see Shane Wright in right now. I think there's plenty of people he could slide in for. I think Cartier's played fine, but I don't think he's done much. I think Wright could slot in. Winterton might be a little bit of a stretch to think that. So,
and has there been a corresponding move here? That's what I'm trying to figure out. This is live.
You're saying real
things are happening here. I'm checking the old searchable database to find out how their actual roster looks right now.
Stall.
We're stalling. I see. Well, Shane Wright's not even on there yet, so we don't know if there's been a corresponding move. They have room to bring up two guys, certainly. But yeah, it doesn't look like they've sent anybody down that I can immediately see. But maybe that's incorrect. Anyway, so a little bit of breaking news there. I'm sure we'll talk about that more next week to see how they play, if they get into games. Our final weekly one-timer. I guess we had two left. But Yaroslav Halak is doing a free agent tryout with the Hurricanes. Freddie Anderson was having a medical issue, which turned out to be a blood clotting problem. So that's a serious but treatable problem.
Yep.
Our other one, I'm rolling two weekly one-timers into one here. Matt Tompkins, 29-year-old backup goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's been serving as the backup, I should say, with Vasilevsky hurt. He's played three games. He gets his first win at age 29. So how do you like that? That's pretty cool.
I love those stories, right? And you get a couple of season. Very cool to see somebody kind of like live out his dream, not only playing in the NHL at 29 years old, but getting a win for a franchise like Tampa Bay. Very cool.
Yep. We close the show with our tweets of the week. John, your tweet of the week.
So it comes from the Canes Twitter account.
Mm-hmm. The aforementioned Hurricanes.
That's right. Can't spell Canes without Natchez, and it's a picture of Martin Natchez after he scored the game winner. I thought that was pretty cute.
You really can't. It's an anagram.
Yeah,
Natchez is an anagram for Canes.
I never knew that. Yeah.
Wow, that is clever. I wonder. There's no way they just figured that out, right? Like somebody figured that out long ago.
They've been holding that for a while. I think so.
Yeah. Mine comes from good friend of the pod, Chris Peters. He's retweeting the Wisconsin Badgers, who are now, I believe, number two in the country. Wisconsin Badgers men's hockey. They said, always keep fighting. Wisconsin defeats number four, Michigan. And then Chris Peters retweets it and says, I wonder how long it will take for Mike Hastings to turn things around in Madison. Mike Hastings opens the door, steps in, 8-1-0 start. Boom. Wisconsin Badger hockey, who swept Minnesota. I think they swept Michigan as well. Minnesota was number one at the time. So like what's happening there. Good stuff for the Wisconsin Badgers, my Wisconsin Badgers. Hey, that wraps up episode 260 of The Sound of Hockey. Again, hopefully the sound quality was okay on this. Thanks again to Chet Buchanan for joining us. Thanks again to our 5-star reviewers, PN Cam and D Stew. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. Subscribe on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Pocket Casts. And we'll talk to you all very soon for episode 261. Cheers. We'll